the propellers are going and the tail end of the ship is thrown up so as to be above the water level, the whole ship will vibrate and be shaken to pieces by those revolving propellers. So, in a big storm, and life is a big storm all the time, you let go and you become like a cork on the water or a ping pong ball in a mountain stream. So that's the art of Taoism. That's the whole thing. That's Wu Wei. Zhuangzi has the funniest tales about this. He often says, people who are trying to help things along are a nuisance. The do-gooders. He has a conversation between Lao Tzu and Confucius, in which Confucius is prating about charity and duty to one's neighbor. And Lao Tzu says to him, this is nonsense. He is just binding things onto people, putting burdens on them with charity and duty to one's neighbor. He says to Confucius, look now at the universe. The trees grow upwards without exception. The stars always follow their courses. And the migrating birds at the various seasons always cluster with complete regularity. But they don't say anything. They don't have any religion. And your idea of eliminating yourself is a positive manifestation of self. You have brought much confusion, sir, to the kingdom, because you are like one who beats a drum in search of a fugitive. Or we would say, like the police driving to a raid with their sirens on. And of course, when the fugitive hears the drums, he conceals himself. And so when you sound all sorts of drums and promise to be virtuous and make resolutions to be virtuous, you're in for trouble. Because the devil hears you coming. You see, now this is something that's very important. There is a Zen story which describes a woodcutter working in the forest, chopping down trees. And he suddenly noticed in a bush over there an animal that was watching him. And this animal is a Satori animal. And he thought, I'm going to get that animal for lunch. But the animal could read his thoughts. And the animal said to him, you think you're going to catch me, don't you? And the woodsman looked round and he made for it, and the animal vanished. And then appeared at the opposite end of the clearing, laughing, saying, you can't catch me. And he thought, the next time I see that animal, I'm going to move to the opposite end of the clearing from which it appears, catch it that way. And the animal said, you're thinking, aren't you, to go to the opposite side of the clearing from which you see me? And for a while, the man tried, by going in various directions with his axe, to catch this animal. All to no avail. So he got disgusted and went back to chopping the tree. And the animal laughed at him again and said, so you've given up. And just that moment, the axe head flew off the axe and killed the animal. You see? He had to get it without intention to do so. That's what's called purposelessness in Taoism, which is a form of Wu Wei. And a Taoist text says, when purpose has been used to achieve purposelessness, the point has been grasped. So, it's the same problem we have. In India, you know, there's a superstition that if you think of a monkey while you're taking medicine, the medicine won't work. So you're in the predicament of trying not to think of the monkey while taking medicine. And that happens to us whenever we try to be natural. Everybody can see it's forced, it's faked. And so you think then, how can I be genuinely natural? How can I really flow with the course of nature? How can I let my mind think whatever it wants to think? Because the moment I start doing that, I realize I'm doing it with an ulterior motive. I'm trying to meditate, I'm trying to grow spiritually. And that ruins the whole thing. Well, when you've tried for a long time to get the right attitude, and you find that all the attitudes you get are phony ones, then you come to the realization there's nothing you can do about it. It really doesn't make any difference. And again, the principle that I've emphasized all along, you give up. And in so doing, gain the strength and energy that you were looking for. You see, it's like trying to live in the present. Gurdjieff used to set his students the exercise he called self-remembering. That is, constantly, all day long, be completely aware of what you're doing. Have your mind always on the immediate moment. Oh, and it's tough to do that. You get distracted all the time. Till one fine day you realize, to your astonishment, there is no way at all of having your mind anywhere else but in the present moment. Because even when you think about the past or the future, you're doing it now, aren't you? And that results in a very curious transformation of consciousness. You feel that that the present moment is flowing along and carrying you with it all the time. Just like the flow of the Tao. The flow of the Tao is what we would call the flow of the present. See? And you're with it. There's no way of being anywhere else. The Zhongyun, the book called The Unwobbling Pivot, says, the Tao is that from which one cannot deviate. That from which one can deviate is not the Tao. Or to put it into the form of a Zen story, the master Joshu said to Nansen, what is the Tao? Nansen replied, your everyday mind is the Tao. Joshu asked, how do you get into accord with it? Nansen replied, when you try to accord, you deviate. So that's the principle. And this, again, the paradox, you see. This sounds like a completely laissez-faire, spineless attitude to life. But it is precisely Taoism which underlies, in common with Buddhism, in conjunction with Buddhism, it underlies the greatest achievements of Chinese art and culture. It underlies judo. It underlies the Zen arts of Japan, calligraphy, architecture, gardens. It is the form of Chinese philosophy which in subsequent years became most interested in science and in the study of nature. The Confucians never had any interest in science because they were bookish people. They were all absorbed in texts. They were essentially scholastics and never opened the book of nature. But the Taoists were always observing natural phenomena, how they worked. They were interested, above all, in manual skills and using the Tao to perfect manual skills. And therefore, these lazy people achieved the most interesting results because they were like water, which is lazy and always seeks the line of least resistance. But that is almost the same thing as intelligence.
Sounds True presents Leave It Be, Session 5, Being in the Way, Part 1, with Alan Watts.
One of the first things which everybody should understand is that every creature in the universe that is in any way sensitive and in any manner of speaking conscious regards itself as a human being. That is to say, it knows and is aware of a hierarchy of beings above it and a hierarchy of beings below it. If you take such a tiny creature as a fruit fly, which lives only a few days, it is aware of all sorts of weird little animals and objects and spores floating in the atmosphere, which we don't even notice unless we've got a microscope around, and very few people have. And it criticizes them as being inferior animals and all that sort of thing, whereas human beings are things that it doesn't comprehend. They're in, as much outside its intellect as a quasar is outside ours. And we see these far-off objects floating in the heavens, and we have only the vaguest idea of what they may be. Actually, we may all be some kind of atoms within the hair on somebody's nose in another dimension. And all these galaxies being the constituent elements. Who knows? But there is, I think, a fundamental principle that everybody must understand in order to know what is the meaning of the Tao, or the Chinese sense of the course of nature, and that is the principle of relativity. It's absolutely fundamental to an understanding of Taoist philosophy, relativity. That is to say that wherever you are, and whoever you are, and whatever you are, you're in the middle. You know, pig in the middle. That's the game. And you see, just in the same way as when you stand, say, on the deck of a ship, and you can see a horizon all around you to exactly the same distance, you're in the center of a circle, because your senses extend a certain direction, in all directions, and therefore give you the impression of being in the middle. Now, everything in the world feels like that. And also it has its own kind, which look natural to it. You see, spiders and hydras and sea urchins and so on don't look very natural to us. We say, well, I wouldn't want to look like that. But they say when they see us, well, what kind of an awful thing is that? And what a lot of nonsense it does. You see, if your dog watches you when you're typewriting, your dog looks at you and says, well, these new human beings, especially cats, dogs have tried to catch on to human beings in a sort of a funny way, but cats look at you and think, you're out of your mind. You're absolutely crazy. What do you sit there all day for, feverishly pecking away at a typewriter, say, or doing something busy like that, when you could sit and curl up and purr? You just, the cat, from the cat's point of view, you don't understand what life's about at all. But all cats and cat company, cats in cat company, they feel that they are people. Because the definition of a person is where you look from. And of course, that is the meaning of the very interesting Buddhist idea. You can only become a Buddha, that is to say, you can only become enlightened, liberated, aware of your unity with the universe from the human position. And Buddhism calls itself the middle way, because it is the way for someone in the middle, and that's everyone. So there is, believe it or not, a form of yoga, ways of liberation, for worms, for fruit flies, for snails, for spiders, for birds, for everything. You see, in their situation, feel just as cultured as we can possibly feel. And they have their distinctions and their snobberies, just in the same way that we do. Because you see, they dig all sorts of things that we don't even notice. We think a person is cultured because they play the piano or the violin or they read poetry or they have a lot of big library and they have paintings all around and they have a fancy house and so on. And we say, well, there's a person of culture. And we can see at once that this is really some rather elegant human being. But when you get down into the world of fishes, they have exactly the same thing. Only, instead of depending on collecting a lot of books and things like that, it is the precise way, the very subtle wiggles of a tail, the little tremors of vibration that makes one fish a very superior fish as compared with other fish. And all the other fish look at that one and say, oh my, to be like that, what a genius, to be able to do just that little extra thing, see? Because they're very sensitive. Even airplanes in formation can't begin to do what birds and fish can do in their communal swirling dances that they do. Now, let me just interject something here that is rather important. Biological existence is such that you have to kill to live. And vegetarians have no way out, because plants also are forms of life. And to the degree that they are aware, and they are aware to a certain degree, they think they're human. And when you chew up plants, you are making a very painful experience for cabbages and carrots and things like that, and you can't get out of it. And the only possible solution of the dilemma that we are in ethically, that we have to eat in order to live, that being is killing, the only possible solution to this dilemma is to reverence food and to cook it as well as possible and enjoy it to the full. There is no other ethical response that is in any way possible to this situation. And also, you must, as a human being, remember that you aren't the only pebble on the beach, that you belong just as much as the fish and the cows and the apples. You belong to a mutual eating society. And something in the end is going to eat you. Now, human beings are not, as a rule, eaten by large creatures. We've got rid of them, things like lions and tigers that chew up on human beings. There are not many of them around. We are eaten instead by tiny creatures. And the morticians are a very vicious group of people, because they are trying to deprive all those microorganisms of the proper human food. When they bury them in formaldehyde and encase them in concrete things with complicated bronze caskets, where instead of giving the worms a ball, they just do nothing. They just rot there, you know, and become slowly more and more sort of attenuated and parchment-like, instead of continuing into the flow of the course of life, which is the proper thing to do, to make an act of respect to the earth from which you have gained all these the life, and give yourself back to it when you die. After all, that's only courteous. And this keeps the thing running. So we should start a campaign at once to abolish the whole mortician business and put it in entirely new lines, where dead human beings are buried in great fields about 3 feet underground, which are left for a long time until all stinks and everything have vanished, and this is the most beautiful soil for growing corn and lettuce and artichokes and vines and everything beautiful. So you go back into the cycle. But now, here is a very strange thing. That every creature, therefore, which feels that it is human, and which knows that it's there in the same way as you know you're here, experiences being here as constituting a sort of blockage. Now, practically, there are very few human beings that don't feel this, and I'm sure there are very few creatures that don't feel it in some way too. The sensation of a certain tension which constitutes